History tells the story of the world and of our lives. Sometimes that history goes bump in the night. Broadcasting from the Center of Oddity and the Supernatural in Central Florida, it's the History Goes Bump podcast.
Hello, you spooktacular people. Welcome to History Goes Bump Redux. I am your host, Diane.
And this is Kelly.
Kelly, on this Redux, we're going way back. We did the Poe Show for episode number 3. It was a kind of glance over Edgar Allan Poe's life and some of the places that he might be haunting, but it wasn't as thorough as we do things now.
Right. Very light in nature.
It's high time that we do Poe the right way. So on this Redux, we're doing the life and afterlife of Edgar Allan Poe. Are you ready to go back?
I'm ready. Edgar Allan Poe's life is a study in tragedy, and like many of us, he kept no diary and had few close friends, so putting together a map of his life can be cumbersome. He was one of the greatest writers of all time, able to cross all genres. Poe even created a couple of them, but his life and work wasn't celebrated until long after he was dead, and his death has always been cloaked in mystery. Perhaps that is why his spirit is at unrest and reputedly haunts various locations connected to his life.
When did you first hear some of Poe's works?
As a child with those very books that you have in your hand.
It's so great. I have always been very connected to Poe as well, even when I was a kid. I mean, for my 16th birthday, I think it was, or Christmas that year, I asked for the complete works of Edgar Allan Poe, which I have sitting right here. And it's a great book because it does it in the order that they were published. And then I meet you, and your parents basically gifted us a collection that they've had for years. And we've put pictures of it up on Instagram. And actually, we had a book collector, an old book collector, contacted me literally just a couple weeks ago and was like, "Do you still have these? And are they for sale?" And I was like, "No, not for sale, but yes, we do." But it's a series of books. I can't remember how many of them are there, if there's like 10 of them.
I believe there's 10.
And it just says Edgar Allan Poe on them. And then the spine says like what volume this is about. These are the Morella edition. And it says this edition of the complete works of Edgar Allan Poe is printed on Wattman handmade paper. And boy, does it have this distinctive smell to it. And is limited to 26 signed and lettered sets, of which this is letter P.
I know. It's so incredible. I always told my parents, you know, when anything happens, I want those books.
And the year on it is 1902.
They're so awesome.
At the very beginning of this, it's Edgar Allan Poe, World Author by Charles F. Richardson. I don't know if he's any relation to Bill.
Perhaps.
But I love that he had written this because it's talking about how Poe was basically, you know, kind of in this competition to be one of the world authors and why he should be a world author. And since we always talk about ghosts and history on here, of course, it would be interesting to kind of look at what Poe thought about that stuff. He wrote a lot about it. And so Charles had written here, "Annabel Lee, not less than Browning's Prospice, is the quintessential of belief in the two things which are the final hopes and claims of spiritual religion, personality and a source of all things which creates the love to reward the love." So he's basically talking about what essence of us goes on afterward. If there is an essence that goes on afterward, something created it. If the doctrine of the indestructibility of individuality be a delusion, Poe must hold rank as the most logical and most convincing of dreamers. If there be such a thing in men, or in any man, as an immortal soul, Poe must be accounted one of its noblest, although unordained proclaimers and priests. In others of his graver stories, one could point out the metaphysical and religious value of his contributions to the cause of reason spirituality. Now meeting an organized pressure from the ranks of a crass and scientifically bigoted materialism, and could easily show what a large debt is owing to this long-abused and imperfectly understood artist by that conservative portion of society which has been absurdly taught to regard him as an Ishmaelite, chiefly because, in his latest adventure, Amid the Ragged Mountains, of this world Poe, the man, so often fell by the wayside. Or, if I may quote my own words in a previous essay, "The will dieth not, God himself is but a great will. Man by the strength of will conquers death that conquers all else." This is the answer to the riddle of Poe, and to the vaster enigma of this world. And then he says, to it he addressed the shorter lyric To Helen, most perfect of all his poems. Annabel Lee was not only the song of a single loss, but a passionate world cry of the immortal to the immortal. But he who finds in this thought the last word of the author of The Raven has never read his other and greater poems at all. It is more than a coincidence that in the chronological arrangement of his verse, the final words are, "Down the valley of the shadow, ride boldly, ride," the shade replied, "if you seek for El Dorado." So I just thought that was really cool. I wanted to share that. Many of Poe's writings carry a melancholy theme throughout. The man could write anything, and pretty much did. He was both a poet and the master of short storytelling. He created the detective genre and was one of the kings of horror and the macabre. Poe could write a tall tale, science fiction, and black comedy. The writing career he pursued started and ended with poems. His literary criticisms made him enemies. Weird facts were of great interest to him, as was landscape gardening. The philosophies he had on life and spirituality were never very clear, but he did write about both. And the man loved a few women in his life. All of these loves either never blossomed or ended tragically. And the mystery as to how he came to his final end will never be known, which seems only fitting.
Poe was born in the city of Boston on January 19, 1809, to parents that he would never really know because his mother, English actress Elizabeth Arnold Hopkins, died before he was 3 years of age on December 8, 1811. His father, Irish-American actor David Poe Jr., was a horrible drunk and is believed to have died a few days after his wife from consumption. Edgar was an orphan, but not alone. He had a sister named Rosalie, who was born a year after him. The siblings were taken in by family friends named Mr. and Mrs. Luke Usher. The fire at Richmond Theater on December 26, 1811, left many children orphaned, and so as children were being distributed to families, Edgar and Rosalie were included. Rosalie went to Mr. and Mrs. William Mackenzie, and Edgar went to John and Francis Allen. John was a Scottish merchant, and he owned a store with a partner. The Allens lived above it and had Edgar baptized with the name Edgar Allan Poe. The store made the Allens very well off, and it was said that Edgar was spoiled. John decided to go to England to establish another branch of his business, and the family lived there from 1815 to 1820.
They returned to America and lived in Richmond, Virginia. Poe had a friend named Robert Stannard when he was 14 years old. Robert's mother was Jane Stith Stannard, and she formed a special bond with Edgar. He called her Helen, and he eventually wrote the poem To Helen for her. She provided a sympathetic ear for him and comforted him often, and Poe said that he wrote the poem in his, quote, "passionate boyhood to the first purely ideal love of my soul." I'm going to share that with everyone here really quick. "Helen, thy beauty is to me like those Nicaean barks of yore that gently over a perfumed sea the weary wayworn wanderer bore to his own native shore. O desperate seas long wont to roam, thy hyacinth hair, thy classic face, thy naiad airs have brought me home to the glory that was Greece and the grandeur that was Rome. Lo, in that little window niche, how statue-like I see thee stand, the folded scroll within thy hand, a Psyche from the regions which are holy land." The Helen here is alluding to Helen of Troy, and he's comparing Stannard to her. So you can kind of see what he thought about her. So I clearly think there was more than just maybe a mother figure for him. He might have had a little bit of love there for her. Unfortunately, she was not the healthiest woman physically or mentally, and she became ill in the spring of 1824. It was said that she died on April 28th with her mind totally deranged, is how she was described. So I'm not sure what she was sick from, but it clearly affected her mentally as well. Poe was sent to the finest schools, and he did very well academically.
In 1825, Poe fell in love with Sarah Elmira Royster, the daughter of a neighbor. Shortly thereafter, they were engaged without parental approval. Poe entered the University of Virginia at Charlottesville in 1826. There, he continued gambling and drinking, losing $2,000. He wrote to Elmira Royster while away, but unbeknownst to him, she only received one. Her father intercepted the rest. Thus, when Edgar returned to Richmond, he found her engaged to another man. Poe came to John about his debts, and his foster father refused to help him out. The debts kept Poe from returning to school. The relationship between John and Poe would never recover. He fled to Boston, tried to become a poet, failed, and joined the army. He enlisted under the name Edgar A. Perry and claimed to be 22 years old rather than his real age of 18, and he was stationed at Fort Independence in Boston Harbor. He managed to get a small book of verse, Tamerlan and Other Poems, published at this time, though without great success.
On October 31, 1827, Poe was transferred to Fort Moultrie at Charleston, South Carolina. He served for 13 months there. While there, Poe fell in love with a woman named Anna Ravenel, and some people believe that the poem Annabel Lee was written about her. Scholars don't support this, but Mike Brown from Pleasing Terrors does, and he's the one that brought it to our attention. He talks about it on his ghost tour that he does there, and he also did, I believe, a couple of episodes about it on his podcast, too. And most Charlestonians believe this to be true. Legend claims that Anna Ravenel was 14 years old when she met an 18-year-old man serving at Fort Moultrie. Her father didn't approve and tried to keep the two apart. Apparently, she was already promised to somebody else, so he didn't want this soldier or nobody hanging out with his daughter. But they would sneak away together often. Poe was transferred, and Anna became ill and died. She was buried in an unmarked grave in the Unitarian Church graveyard and is said to haunt it because she is looking for her long-lost love. Her full-bodied apparition is seen sometimes near an unmarked grave. A man named William wrote in 2014, "I used to live in a house behind this graveyard. One night, late at night, I went outside to take some trash out and saw a young woman in a white dress at the iron gate on Jacob's Alley. I thought it was really strange and started approaching to get a better view of what was going on. As I got closer, I realized the girl was actually inside the gate as opposed to outside, as I had originally thought, and her back was turned to me. Even though I'm sure it was a ghost, I don't really believe in ghosts, so I'm somewhat conflicted about what I saw with my own eyes, since the graveyard was most certainly closed at that time. She didn't disappear or attempt to move as I approached, and I was sure to make noise to see if the person would run or seek help. That said, I oddly did not feel any fear and did not sense that whatever it was there to harm anyone. I am from Virginia and live on the same street as Poe's wife's home and felt this was just too weird not to give my 2 cents. I had no idea about the Annabel Lee connection or why I waited so long to look into any past ghost sightings at that graveyard, because I've told the story many times and always felt a little ridiculous telling it."
Goodness.
And I know when Mike is on his ghost tours and you stand outside of that gate and he's telling the story about Anna and how she could have been Annabel Lee and how she haunts the place. Her dad, according to the legend, when Poe came back, he had heard from her sister that she was ill. So he tried to get back before she passed away. The father, of course, would not let him see her. And then he put up several headstones and buried her under who knows which one because he didn't want Poe to know which grave was hers.
That's so terrible.
Or whoever this guy was that she was in love with. But I don't know. There's enough evidence that Mike presents that I think it really could be true. But as he's telling the story, he has literally had people on his ghost tour pass out in front of that gate. So there's some kind of energy in there that will overcome some people. And we actually covered the Unitarian Church graveyard. I don't know if it's in Haunted Cemeteries 2 or 3. We did it early on. The last piece that was published by him was called The Bells. Right before that was Annabel Lee on October 9th, 1849. It was after he had passed. It was many and many a year ago in a kingdom by the sea that a maiden there lived whom you may know by the name of Annabel Lee. And this maiden she lived with no other thought than to love and be loved by me. I was a child and she was a child in this kingdom by the sea, but we loved with a love that was more than love, I and my Annabel Lee. With a love that the winged seraphs of heaven coveted her and me. And this was the reason that long ago, in this kingdom by the sea, a wind blew out of a cloud, chilling my beautiful Annabel Lee, so that her high-born kingsmen came and bore her away from me, to shut her up in a sepulchre in this kingdom by the sea. The angels not half so happy in heaven went envying her and me. Yes, that was the reason, as all men know, in this kingdom by the sea, that the wind came out of the cloud by night, chilling and killing my Annabel Lee. But our love, it was stronger by far than the love of those who were older than we, of many far wiser than we, and neither the angels in heaven above nor the demons down under the sea can ever dissever my soul from the soul of the beautiful Annabel Lee. For the moon never beams without bringing me dreams of the beautiful Annabel Lee, and the stars never rise, but I feel the bright eyes of the beautiful Annabel Lee. And so all the night tide I lie down by the side of my darling, my life and my bride, in her sepulchre there by the sea, in her tomb by the sounding sea.
Poe's new station was Fortress Monroe in Virginia. In 1829, Poe was promoted to the rank of sergeant major. Naturally enough, given his romantic inclinations, Poe considered himself an aristocrat and despised his status as an enlisted man. He left the army in 1829, lived for a time with his Aunt Maria at her little house in Baltimore, and then in 1830, with his adoptive father's help, won admission to West Point. He was dismissed from the academy for excessive demerits within the year. Poe then headed for New York and published Poems by Edgar Allan Poe. New York was just a time of illness and poverty for Poe, who tried in vain to get John Allen to send him money. When John Allen died a few years afterward, he left his fortune to his legitimate and illegitimate children, but gave nothing to Poe, perhaps assuming he would only waste the money.
And the way I've read it, he didn't even mention him in the will.
That's so sad.
So it was like he disowned him or something. It just really is ironic when you think that I'm sure John considered Edgar to be a never-do-well. And now look where he is today.
Right.
It's too bad he didn't know the success in his time. Poe then left for Baltimore, and from 1831 to 1835, he lived with his paternal grandmother, Aunt Maria Clem, and young cousin Virginia. Their poverty was such that Maria and her daughter were among the beggar women who went to the city center with empty baskets to be filled with food by passersby. That was an early form of welfare. Poe in this time turned professional writer. In January of 1834, Poe sold the story, The Visionary, to The Lady's Book, and this was his first story to appear in a magazine that got a wide distribution. We're not sure when a love spark started between Poe and his cousin Virginia. Right before the two became engaged, Poe had his attention on the Messenger's publisher's 18-year-old daughter, Lizzie. His Aunt Maria didn't like this girl, describing her as capricious and addicted to morphine, and she took steps to stop any kind of engagement. She wrote Poe that a family member was going to take Virginia into his home and educate her. And upon hearing that, Edgar asked for Virginia's hand in marriage. We were discussing this yesterday, Kelly, and I don't know if it was because he actually had feelings for Virginia and it pushed him into something, if he was trying to protect her from being taken away. I'm not sure. He took out a marriage license on September 22, 1835, and they were more than likely privately married at the First Presbyterian Church. Virginia was barely 13 at the time.
Goodness, I remember that.
Yeah, it's one of those difficult things about Poe's biography. Some assert that he was more interested in Maria than Virginia because the older woman served as a better substitute for his dead mother. But he certainly had a strong affection for Virginia, and they remained passionately devoted to each other the rest of their lives, although some scholars have cast doubts on his interest in sex. So I don't know if they ever even consummated anything, which I would prefer to think they didn't. The couple then moved back to Richmond with Aunt Clem, and lived in a boarding house and would be publicly married on May 16, 1836.
Poe worked as an editor in Virginia, but by 1837, he had quit his job and brought his family to New York, where they only lived for a year. After that, they moved to Philadelphia, and Poe became assistant editor of Gentleman's Magazine and enjoyed the most prosperous time in his life, although there were reportedly times they subsisted on molasses and bread for weeks.
Ugh.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of molasses.
No.
He published a number of works, including Tales of the Grotesque and The Prose Romances of Edgar A. Poe, and became editor of Graham's Magazine. Poe also worked for a time with an Englishman printer named James Petter, who said of Poe, "the most gentlemanly young man he ever saw, but so temperamental that he feared Poe might end his days in a madhouse."
I think he had him pegged pretty good.
Yeah, sounds like it. In January of 1842, Virginia Poe burst a blood vessel while singing, and this would begin her decline in health. During this year, Poe published Life and Death, the first version of The Oval Portrait, The Mask of the Red Death, The Pit and the Pendulum, The Mystery of Marie Roget, a long study of the mysterious death of a cigar girl, Mary Rogers, in New York in the previous year, The Black Cat, and The Gold Bug.
And now a little break for a word about one of our sponsors. Poe saw New York as the pinnacle he must ascend, and he moved everybody there in 1844. So as you could see, he's like bouncing back and forth, going to all these different places. He took a job with the New York Evening Mirror, which published his first renowned poem, The Raven, the next January. It was a big hit, but brought little financial reward to Poe. Switching to the Broadway Journal, he quickly became its editor and proprietor, but ran out of money and lost the publication. Virginia started coughing up blood at this time, and she rapidly lost what little health she had. She died on January 30, 1847. Her funeral was on February 2nd, and Poe wrote the poem Deep in Earth right after that. It simply reads, "Deep in earth my love is lying, and I must weep alone." Desperately unhappy and lonely, Poe thereafter succumbed to violent drinking binges and at one point attempted suicide. A friend had said that Poe seemed to care little if he lived a day or a year, but he also maintained periods of sobriety. He supported himself with writing and lectures and threw himself at an assortment of women.
Poe first crossed paths with an American poet, transcendentalist, and spiritualist named Sarah Helen Whitman in July of 1845, but things didn't fire up romantically for the two until she wrote a tribute poem to him for a friend's Valentine party in 1848. Poe responded with his own poem, and he went to see her in Providence in September, attempting suicide along the way. He took two doses of laudanum, and when he arrived in Boston, he was close to death.
Here is the To Helen that he wrote to Helen Whitman. "I saw thee once only, years ago. I must not say how many, but not many. It was a July midnight, and from out a full-orbed moon that, like thine own soul, soaring, sought a precipitant pathway up through heaven. There fell a silvery silken veil of light, with quietude and sultriness and slumber. Upon the upturned faces of a thousand, roses that grew in an enchanted garden, where no wind dared to stir unless on tiptoe, fell on the upturned faces of these roses, that gave out in return for the love light, their odorous souls in an ecstatic death. Fell on the upturned faces of these roses, that smiled and died in this patcher, enchanted by thee and by the poetry of thy presence. Clad all in white upon a violet bank, I see thee half reclining, while the moon fell on the upturned faces of the roses, and on thine own upturned, alas, in sorrow. Was it not fate that on this July midnight, was it not fate, whose name is also sorrow, that bade me pause before that garden gate to breathe the incense of those slumbering roses? No footsteps stirred, the hated world all slept, save only thee and me, O heaven, O God, how my heart beats in coupling those two words. Save only thee and me, I paused, I looked, and in an instant all things disappeared. Ah, bear in mind this garden was enchanted. The pearly luster of the moon went out, the mossy banks and the meandering paths. The happy flowers and the repining trees were seen no more, the very roses' odors died in the arms of the adoring heirs. All expired save thee, save less than thou, save only the divine light in thine eyes, save but the soul in thine uplifted eyes. I saw but them, they were the world to me. I saw but them, saw only them for hours. Saw only them until the moon went down. What wild heart history seemed to lie and written upon those crystalline celestial spheres. How dark a woe, yet how sublime a hope. How silently serene a sea of pride. How daring an ambition, yet how deep. How fathomless a capacity for love. But now at length, dear Diane, sank from sight into a western couch of thunder cloud. And thou, a ghost amid the entombing trees, didst glide away, only thine eyes remained. They would not go, they never yet have gone, lighting my lonely pathway home that night. They have not left me as my hopes have since. They follow me, they lead me through the years. They are my ministers, yet I their slave. Their office is to illuminate and enkindle, my duty to be saved by their bright light, and purified in their electric fire, and sanctified in their Elysian fire. They fill my soul with beauty, which is hope, and are far up in heaven the stars I kneel to in the sad, silent watches of my night, while even in the meridian glare of day I see them still, two sweetly scintillant Venuses extinguished by the sun."
They wrote each other often and became engaged, with Poe promising to stay sober through the engagement. The promise only lasted a few days, and soon it was found out that Poe was also pursuing a woman named Annie Richmond and his childhood sweetheart, Sarah Elmira Royster. Whitman called off the engagement.
Elmira was widowed with two children when she saw Poe again. Their affection rekindled, but she was not eager to become engaged, as her husband's will stipulated that she would lose 3/4 of the estate if she remarried.
Oh my goodness, like, that's terrible.
Don't ever marry anyone again. She also had heard the rumors about Poe's drinking and encouraged him to join the local temperance movement in Baltimore. It's believed the couple came to some kind of agreement, but had no opportunity to marry because of Poe's death. Poe left her in Richmond on September 27, 1849, and Elmira wrote, "He came up to my house on the evening of the 26th of September to take leave of me. He was very sad and complained of being quite sick. I felt so wretched about him all of that night that I went up early the next morning to inquire about him when, much to my regret, he had left in the boat for Baltimore." She would go on to never speak of Poe or their relationship and lived as a recluse.
October 3rd, 1849 was election day in Baltimore. Poe was found laying in a gutter by a man named Joseph Walker outside a polling place and tavern called Gunner's Hall at 44 Lombard Street, wearing someone else's clothes. Walker summoned Dr. Joseph Evans Snodgrass, who was joined by Poe's uncle via marriage, Henry Herring, and they took Poe by carriage to Washington Hospital, where the doctors couldn't figure out what was wrong with the writer. He was comatose and delirious for much of the time, but was occasionally lucid before he died on October 7th at the age of 40. Just prior to his death, Dr. John Moran's wife sat with Poe, and he asked her if there was hope for him in the next world, and she said yes and read to him John 14 from the Bible. She then left him, and he passed. He was buried on October 8, 1849.
A newspaper reported that Poe died from congestion of the brain, whatever that is. Dr. Moran had referenced that he thought Poe had been drugged and that an opiate could have possibly remedied the situation, but since Poe had a bad heart, they felt that treatment was too dangerous. Of course, if somebody's dying, wouldn't you just try anything? Another doctor of Poe's named Unger knew that Poe went through periods of inflammation of the intestines after drinking binges. So he said he thought the cause was, quote, "inflammation of the intestines, the diarrhea preceding the fever." To this day, nobody knows what Poe died from, but there have been many theories.
Dr. Michael Benitez, a cardiologist and assistant professor at the University of Maryland Medical Center, told the New York Times in 1996 that he thought Poe had been much maligned with stories that he was drunk when found in the gutter. Dr. Benitez thinks that because Poe was perspiring heavily, hallucinating, and shouting at imaginary companions the day after he was brought to the hospital, and then the next day he seemed better but could not remember falling ill, that it is more likely that Poe was suffering from rabies. His symptoms were classic encephalitis rabies. The New York Times story continued, Dr. Benitez worked on Poe's case as a part of a clinical pathological conference. Doctors are presented with a hypothetical patient and a description of the symptoms and are asked to render a diagnosis. Dr. Benitez said that at first he did not know that he had been assigned Poe, because his patient was only described as E.P., a writer from Richmond. But by the time he was scheduled to present his findings a few weeks later, he had figured out the mystery. There was a conspicuous lack in this report of things, like CT scans and MRIs, the doctor said. I started to say to myself, this doesn't look like it was from the 1990s. Then it dawned on me that E.P. was Edgar Poe.
When it comes to alcohol, Poe is hard to peg down. Countless stories have been written about his alcoholism. A curator at the Poe House Museum in Baltimore named Jeff Jerome claimed that Poe had a sensitivity to alcohol and that a glass of wine could make him violently ill for days. He may have drunk more when he was younger, but before his death, he avoided alcohol. So the idea that he died from alcohol poisoning doesn't seem possible. Others believe that since Poe was found in clothing he normally wouldn't wear that was dirty and frayed, that he was beaten and mugged. Possibly he was cooped, which was a practice in which men were stuffed in a box like a chicken coop and beaten and then forced to drink alcohol, dressed in clothes that were not their own, and taken to polling places to vote for a certain candidate.
Oh my word.
So if he was given this alcohol and he had this allergy that would make him violently ill for days, maybe they'd given him too much and he was really having an overreaction to that. It's just hard to know because there's so many stories about how much he was drinking all the time. But then this guy's like, nope, that's not possible. And I've heard other people say the same thing. So I just really don't know what the truth is. And one of his main biographers was a man that did not like him because Poe would critique him all the time. So he wrote a lot of crap about Poe that wasn't true.
Before we explore haunts connected to Poe, we need to talk about this book entitled Strange Visitors that was published in 1869. This work was authored by a woman named S.G. Horn, as it was dictated by a clairvoyant who was in a trance. The volume claims to have works dictated after death by authors like Washington Irving, Nathaniel Hawthorne, and Edgar Allan Poe. Poe's contribution was a poem called The Lost Soul. Not only does the poem not match up with Poe's style, but most of this spiritualism and clairvoyance back in the Victorian era was fraud. Something Poe did write was, "The boundaries which divide life from death are at best shadowy and vague. Who shall say where the one ends and where the other begins?"
Edgar Allan Poe lived in several homes during his lifetime, and many survive to this day. Poe's final home is in New York City in the Bronx at 2640 Grand Concourse. The cottage was built in 1812 as a modest fieldhand's house, and at the time that Poe rented it in 1846, it was owned by John Valentine. The area was mainly farmland, and this was within the village of Fordham. Valentine rented the cottage to Poe for $100 a year, and Poe lived there with his wife Virginia and mother-in-law Maria Clemm. Virginia died in the house in 1847, and Maria Clemm eventually moved out in October 1849 after Poe's death. The works Cask of Amontillado, The Bells, and Annabel Lee were all written here. Some furnishings in the cottage belong to Poe, including a rocking chair and mirror. The cottage is run as a museum within Poe Park, which was created from an apple orchard across from the house. Major restoration was done in 2010. And from what I could find, there was no haunting going on there.
The last home he rented in Philadelphia is preserved by the National Park Service and is known as the Edgar Allan Poe National Historic Site. Poe spent 6 years in Philadelphia and lived in this house from 1843 to 1844, and these were said to be his happiest and most productive. The Black Cat was written in this house, and the basement described in it is very similar to the one here. It is within a wall of the basement that the narrator of the story conceals the body of his wife, whom he has murdered. He doesn't realize that he also walled up a living cat. When the police come to investigate, they hear shrieking from within the wall and discover the corpse and the living black cat.
The oldest home in Richmond, Virginia serves as a Poe museum, although Poe never lived in the building. The museum opened in 1922 and holds many of his personal belongings, original writings, and memorabilia. The old stone house was built in 1740 and was built by German immigrant Jacob Egge. The Marquis de Lafayette visited the Egge House in 1824 and was accompanied by the Junior Corps of Riflemen, and a 15-year-old Poe was one of those members. So Poe had been in the house once. Side note, Lafayette had been friends with Poe's grandfather and visited his grave on this visit. Thought that was kind of a cool fun fact. It is possible that he is attached to some of the artifacts in the museum, as some claim his spirit visits the house, usually showing up as a dark shadow. That shadow is physically seen and has been captured in photos. The courtyard behind the house seems to be his favorite spot, and he has an affinity for a hand mirror that had belonged to Virginia. The spirits of the two Egge children are said to be here as well. Typically, ghostly activities are footsteps, the noise of slamming doors, even though many of the doors have been removed, so I don't know how they're making that noise.
Interesting.
And voices caught on EVP. One bizarre story claims that a box of Poe bobbleheads was unpacked and the figurines were put up on a shelf without triggering the security system. None of the staff said they had emptied the box. Maybe Poe wasn't fond of the bobbleheads, or maybe he was. I don't know.
Very bizarre. Baltimore is home to the Edgar Allan Poe House and Museum. Poe lived in this brick two-story house from 1833 to 1835 with his aunt, grandmother, and two cousins. There is a portable writing desk, chair, telescope, china, and glassware that were used by Poe when he lived with the Allan family in Richmond, Virginia. His grandmother, Elizabeth Poe, died in the home and reputedly haunts it. The house has a heavy energy to it, and one time a window popped out of its frame and crashed to the floor. Paranormal investigators and employees of the museum report icy cold spots even in the heat of summer, disembodied voices, windows and doors opening and closing on their own, and people getting tapped on the shoulder. The spirit of Poe has been seen, and sometimes it leaves the house and heads in the direction of the Horse You Came In On saloon.
I'm sorry, but that's funny. That name tickled me.
That is a great name.
A bar that was founded in 1775. This was his favorite watering hole in the city, and some claim that it is the last place he was seen before his death. His ghost has been seen inside the saloon. A glass of cognac used to be left out on the bar for Poe, and sometimes a glass would be found empty later. If you go into the bar and announce that you don't think Poe is haunting the place, he might just pull the bar stool out from under you. He has done this, and Poe is also blamed for glasses being thrown to the floor, opening and closing the cash register, and swinging the chandelier. Bar manager Robert Napier was alone in the bar one morning, and he saw somebody walk by on the other side of the railing out of the corner of his eye. He called out that the bar was closed as he looked up and he saw that no one was there.
Could this have been Poe?
The hospital where Poe died has reportedly had Poe's spirit wandering the halls. Poe was buried in Baltimore at the Westminster Burial Ground. His original grave was moved in 1875 to a memorial near the front of the cemetery. A mysterious admirer paid homage to Poe at his grave every year on the writer's birthday from 1949 to 2009.
Wow.
That is some dedication. The admirer would leave 3 red roses and a bottle of cognac. No one knows who the admirer was, and only once was he caught in a grainy picture wearing a black fedora and a long coat. Poe is said to haunt the Westminster Burial Ground and is seen sometimes in the catacombs under the church. And I don't know if that's because he's been moved or not. I haven't gotten to see his grave. He had been buried between Virginia and I think his Aunt Clem, but if they've moved him, he may not be like that anymore, so maybe that's why he's unhappy.
Poe achieved success after he had already passed. If he had lived today, he would have a mansion on the hill with rooms decorated in just the particular way he wanted, something he never experienced during his life because he lived in abject poverty. Whether that was due to his own hand of mismanaging money or because he wasn't as appreciated during his time is a matter for the experts to argue about. For us, Poe was a true master, and it would only be fitting that a master of the macabre would be wandering in spirit in the afterlife. Does the ghost of Poe hang out in these locations?
That is for you to decide. Well, that was a lot of fun. Absolutely love Edgar Allan Poe.
Same.
And I know our listeners do too. This is the first poem that was ever published by Poe. It's called Imitation, and it was published in 1827. A dark unfathomed tide of interminable pride, a mystery and a dream should my early life seem. I say that dream was fraught with a wild and waking thought of beings that have been, which my spirit hath not seen, had I let them pass me by with a dreaming eye. Let none of earth inherit that vision of my spirit. Those thoughts I would control as a spell upon his soul. For that bright hope at last and that light time have passed, and my worldly rest hath gone, with a sigh as it passed on. I care not though it perish, with a thought I then did cherish. Thanks so much for joining us on this Redux. I've been your host, Diane.
And this has been Kelly.
You take care now. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.